Yo, 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 welcome to Crate 808, and today we're blessed by the presence of a UK rapper, musician and chef, the man who's avant-garde with a touch of backyard, a guy who's squeezing 4-carat blingers on his pinky fingers, he's sliding on the beat and dancing on the feature, and even has a mantelpiece figurine with handsome features. Yes, it's the man who watches Cobra when he's not sober, the king-sized beast himself. We got Juggernaut in the house.
Yo,
how you
salute,
doing, bro?
Salute, man. Yo, salute. I'm good. That's a crazy intro, man. You know when people catch those lines like that? That's amazing.
Mate, I fell in love with you when you referenced Cobra. And I was like,
yo, have you ever watched Cobra when you're not sober? Cobra is so far, like, it's the most ridiculous action. You know, like, when it gets to the level where you're like, yo, this is like a teenage boy's wet dream. Like, you know what I mean? Like, this is like next level blowing everything up.
Absolutely, man. And that poster as well. Oh, so fucking cool, man. I love that.
Yo, I love the art, all that artwork, man. I'm still waiting for the figurine for the mantelpiece, man. It's coming. It's coming.
Oh, I can't wait. Sell that shit, man. Sell that shit. So, man, but we could sit here and talk Cobra. We could sit here all out for an hour doing that. But
no, I know.
Juggs, man. First, it's a pleasure to have you on. And second, man, you're bringing an album to get into Crate 808 today. Mate, Cool G Raps 456. I'm here for it.
Man. Classic, man. Classic.
I'm here for it. So we're going to dive into that classic. Before I do, though, Juggs, sorry to stop you there, because I got to ask you before anything else. Juggs, man, what's the least hip-hop thing you've done in the last 24 hours?
Oof. The least hip-hop thing I've done in the last 24 hours. Let me think about it. Because I'm still a regular guy. I'm still running about. I think, like, spending, like, 10 minutes cleaning a roasting tin, like that's my thing. It's like,
yeah,
this is a good, it's an old one, so it's really old, so it's like a 70s one, so like some reason the heaviness of it always cooks the chicken perfect. But it's not non-stick or anything, so I'm there just like getting it but not trying to scratch it up too much, and I'm spending time doing it. I think I do a lot of washing up.
Yeah,
I do a lot of washing up. I ain't got a dishwasher or nothing, so I think that's the least hip-hop thing I'm done. Is where I'm getting, like, people are PayPaling me for the verse, but then my hands are in the washing up bowl, like the worlds collide, you know.
That's fantastic, man. That's hip-hop 2020.
You know what I mean? And then people are like, yo, your album's fire, and I'm getting like all the vegetable bits out of the drain and shit like that. Do you know what I mean? So like, I'm like, yo, well, that keeps you humble, I guess.
Yeah, man. I love it. I love that. The dichotomy of hip-hop in today's world, man. It's brilliant. I love that, man.
Yeah, man. Working artists.
That's it, man. Got to stay on the grind, man. Got to stay on the grind.
Yeah.
But man, this album, we're going to dive in. I appreciate you bringing it. Before I do, YouTube viewers, subscribe, man, because we're trying to build this thing, leave some comments and all that. But yeah, I'm just going to drop a little intro for the people who don't know about this album so they can get to know. Let's take it back to 1995, 7 years after the Juice Crew blessed the world with the symphony and slap bang in the middle of hip-hop's golden era. And from New York, New York, the city that never sleeps, where bodies were covered in white sheets laying in the streets, came a debut album from a long-established monster MC from Queens on Cold Chillin' Records. Cool G Rap finally delivered his first solo effort, 456. Here was a guy who'd gone from a kid in Corona with a GED diploma, with more ribs showing than Tony Roma's, to becoming the boss of all bosses, who owned racehorses and a fortress with corridors with Olympic torches and Mona Lisa portraits. After dropping underground classics with DJ Polo, G-Rat reminded us on 456 that he was a man that spunky who liked to keep his pockets chunky, who'd been running the number rackets wearing Pele jackets with fast loot tactics. Yes, he was now well up in the millionaire brackets. Fearless and chilling, G-Rap didn't simply spin street tales punctured with violence on this album. He also filled in the world with the dark colours of pain and sadness that erupt from inner city life. Despite being recorded in the rural woods of Bearsville, 456 was still coming straight off the sidewalks of New York to kill competition executioner style. With so much banging and gunslinging, even G-Rap's own fucking ears were ringing. With production from the likes of Buckwild and Dr. Butcher, and features from Nas and MF Grimm, the album through time became an underground classic remake of Straight NY Rap, showing G-Rap rolling like Frank Nitti, Rich and Pretty, backup kiddies. He had crimeys that's grimy and gritty. Being the root in tooting with the six shooter who could put a hole in your trooper so big people could hula hoop ya, Cool G-Rap laid the foundation of the menacing drug rap that's still prevalent in hip-hop's underground to this day. 456 portrayed a man who'd do a Hail Mary before making Bloody Marys out of your capillaries, answering questions like who's got the biggest strap, who's busting bigger caps, his boom 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 against their pap pap paps. All in all, G-Rap's debut album may have been the last on the historic label Cold Chillin', but it lasted through time through its super dark storytelling, proving there ain't no lollipop lollipop over here, only shotty pops. And even though he was getting papers by the layers, this was a reminder that those that betray us get rocked like Amadeus, providing a passport for the listener to feel and hear G-Rap's plight on the street. 456 showed how a guy riffing as he's sipping on a Heineken could be blowing up in the world, while painting pictures of CeeLo rollers and money folders, sipping bowler, holding mad payola, slanging that coke without the cola. In 90s America, it truly was a damn shame what you had to do to get the money, and Cool G-Rap's warning rings true, that those that cheat us and try to beat us, remember we got hookers with heaters that straight pop and put more shells in your top than Adidas. So, Jugs man, tell us, why does this album belong in Crate 808?
Oh man, like, first off the year, like 95 alone, the classics, like, you know, when people talk like the golden era and going through there, it's mid 5 years into that, you know what I mean? But like 95, first off, even the album title 456, when I was growing up, I didn't play Dice, I didn't play CeeLo, I didn't know about gambling. So when I'm like, I got into this album quite late, actually. I got into this album when I was like 18, 19, but even then I was like, I didn't quite know. And then I got the title, and then from the album cover alone, you've got like Cool G's there, and then you've got Nas, and he's like, yo, that's how you pass the torch, on his own album cover. He's got Nas on his album cover, man. And like that alone, because Nas, you know, one of the greats of all time. I love albums that are long. I do, because people keep saying, oh, when albums are too long. I like long albums, but this 11, we can call it 10 tracks because there's one remix, but 10 solid classics that take you on a journey, man. And they take you on a journey through playing Dice, through the streets, through people he's lost, through the most flyest shit, through the most gangster execution style, through the streets of New York, through, you know, the food he's eating, through everything. And it takes you on a journey, 40 minutes, a package, and it's through and through. It's a journey through the mind of one of the greatest wordsmiths, one of the greatest lyricists ever. And to me, it's a perfect album.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's and the features are right, the beats are right, and it just encapsulates that time, but it's timeless.
Yeah.
At the same time.
Jugs, man, the way you're going on is hyping me up right now. I'm ready to just pause and listen to this album again. Honestly, man. People, stop listening. Stop watching. I put the album on.
You put the album on, man.
Mate, no, but seriously, that is it. And do you know what about this album mainly for me as well was I got into it a little bit later. I was more West Coast around 95. So a few years later. Sure. And it was this album where I was like, oh, Nas is just on that cover. I completely missed that. And I'd not seen Nas do stuff like that too much. He went and collaborated later, but the fact he's got a ledge on, like a legend, is just giving him the cosign. I love that. Just
for sure.
Just because we're coming at it completely differently from people in New York or America or wherever.
Definitely.
How did this like cult classic album find its way to you in Knots, man? How did you even get into it?
Like I said, I got onto this one late. Like I'm 30, so I'm a little younger, and like I had my era of stuff, and then I always went back. But this one, like, I kind of missed the radar because I had the Cool G Rap and Polo stuff, like, because my dad's friend used to play that to me. And then I got into that, and I've always, because I'm the biggest, you know, Pun's one of my favorite rappers, and I knew where his influence came from and who was like the master of the style. Because it was like, because I was a big Rakim fan as well. And when I went back, I was like, it was one of those times where I was literally like, what have I missed? What have I missed? And I still, you know, I bought everything on CD. So it's probably about 2007 or 8 when I was really like, who are my influences? And I already knew Cool G Rap, and I loved this stuff, but and for some reason I missed this album. The two tracks I really knew was Fast Life, which is one of my favorite songs of all time, which really influenced me. And then the classic with MF Grimm on there. So it was like that there, because I was sample digging at the same time. So it was like, going into that, and like the shit ain't never gonna ch- that that shit messed with my head so war. Much because I was like, this Take Them to War shit is so unbelievable. And then I was like, yo, what album is that on? And then when I went back and actually checked it and I got it, it was like, from that day, it was one of them ones where I listened to the album like maybe three times in the day. I was like, yo, I know some of these songs and I've heard them dissected, but hearing it as an album in full is just phenomenal, man. So it's probably about 2007, 2008. And I remember I went to the shop in Knotts called Selected Disc and I bought the CD. And yeah, I was blown away, man. And like, being a fan of Kool G, this took it to another level. Took it to another level for me.
It's a beautiful thing, because when you say there, this is what, so you really listened to it properly 13 years later. And what I love about that is that you went back, man. And people always moan about hip hop and stuff like that. But say you're into someone like yourself now, say someone picks up a Juggernaut album, a young kid is banging that new shit, 12 Bricks, you know what I'm saying, right? They're banging that. It gives me hope as an old head that they'll go back to something 13, 15, 20 years late earlier and be like, oh, that's who Juggs is banging on about. And hopefully, you know, Kool G Rap gets it out of that as well.
See, this is what I'm saying. This is exactly what I want to do, is that connecting those dots is the most important thing for me, because it's about respect and respecting the lineage. Whenever you go into something, you study the greats. And all I've ever wanted to do was stand with the greats. But how do I become a great if I don't know my predecessors and who's came before and who paved the way with gold and gems before I stepped onto the pavement? And I can respect who's put their time and their effort and their love for the craft down and just made the illest shit in the world, man. So
yeah,
you know what I mean? It's like that. It's all about connecting the dots and paying respect. And it's the same with what I do with the samples in my music, to everything. I never do it in a way that is just taking. I do it in a way that pays homage and pays respect to the past in the same way, man, because that's what it's about.
And stamp your own identity on it, mate. That's why I love your music.
Exactly.
Man.
Oh, I appreciate that.
Because I'm listening to something and I'll be like, oh, wow, this has just switched. And it feels like you. It feels like you're doing it.
Yeah,
like, you know,
yeah,
character.
Yeah. For sure.
And G-Rap, but this is the thing about this album as well, listening back to it now, especially after hearing stuff like Poison, hearing stuff like Live and Let Live, stuff like that.
Yeah,
That stuff, Operation CB, that's another one where I was like, I really like those G-Rap, like old school. But the point is with them, they sound old school. They sound a bit more up-tempo. Yeah. So when I pump this isn't the same G-Rap to me. This is a different...
No, because you had like, you had the Marley Marl era and you had that production which set the foundations for what it is. But this, where, like, G-Rap's always had the flow. Like, he's almost like the multi-syllable flow. He's pretty much the originator. Like, you can go back and there's so many people that came before, if we're going all the way back to the late 70s or whatever. But when you actually come to when it comes to that flow, when I'm talking like Nas, Big Pun,
I would say Biggie.
Biggie, that era, yeah, exactly. The multi-syllabic flow where it's like, it's machine gun flow and it's like mathematically precise, but at the same time, the most flavor, the most swing, that's Kool G, man. Like, Kool G came with that, and like, to be so gangster and so eloquent at the same time is incredible. That shit is like mind blowing to me. So that's you know, he set that. That's his shit, man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Absolutely, man. Absolutely. I think there's stuff, like you said there, there are amazing bars on this whole album. But like, I know we have like some categories we'd like to get into, age the best, age the worst, stuff like that. If we're talking about, I know we've banged on about how great the album is, but age the worst, I emailed you yesterday saying, can we do 30 minutes? Yeah. on the Fast Life video at the intro where Nas and G-Rap are sitting there chilling. And I honestly think, man, they've not met before that, because that dap they do, they mess it up badly.
Yo, the dap is crazy, because like, I feel like there was a sound effect on it because the dap didn't connect. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I know they fought with each other for a long time before that. I do know.
Mm-mm,
but
for sure.
when you're not actors as well, and you're rappers and you get in to do this acting scene, it's like, you can tell it's like, well, like, even the camera's not in focus and shit. And
I was like, man, take another take.
Yo, I love that video. I love that video though, because like they got the whole Scarface homage, so he's in like jacuzzi and stuff. But yo, he's running on the treadmill in Tim's. Like, yo, that is the most gangster shit in the world. He's running on the treadmill in Tim's. with the chain and the gold tooth. Like, I was like, yo, this shit is so fire. And he's like working out in the crib. Like, yo, I love that shit, man. That, like, I love those 90s videos where you've got the acting part and then you got the street part. And then it's just, it's perfect to me. The colors, the brightness, everything about it, it just encapsulates it. Yo, Naz is in the sauna, rapping in the sauna.
Yeah, man. That is so gangster, man. That is so gangster. And so different to Illmatic, because Illmatic had come out by then. It was, oh, this is who you are now. That that shocked me a little bit as well. I know it was on Mobs, Hell on Earth and stuff as well. And
yo, I think for me as well, that song, like, Naz, that is the epitome of Naz to me. You know, when he's like, rocking green sway, Wallaby down, like that flow, like that's the Naz, the Raekwon, you know, AZ era of like that fly chop talk that is just, that influenced me so much, man. You know what I mean? So that track there, man, but that dap is emotional, man. I was like, yo, I can't believe it.
It is bad, but again, it's beautiful, because again, you know, we said there about like going back and revisiting. I don't think when they made that they thought this video would last 20, 30, 40 years and people like us would be talking about it. That's a weird thing. We're here talking about that video and you know, all these little things. And I don't think they thought, let's take a second, third take, because we're here, we're living the fast life. We're just doing this.
Living the fast life, man.
Moving on.
We're the illest lyricists in the world. Like, the video, you know, it is what it is. And we put something down that's classic. So
for sure.
Yeah,
man. For sure. It's brilliant. It's brilliant.
Hey, what's up? This is Black Thought, and you are now rocking with the Crate 808 Podcast.
Yo. This is Stretch Armstrong.
Ooh-wee! My name is Bobby DeGarcia, a.k.a. Cool Bob Love.
You're now listening to Crate 808.
Hey, yo, what up, y'all? This is Prince Paul, and you're rocking with Crate 808 Podcast.
Yo, it's EV Evidence, Dilated Peoples. You're rocking with the Crate 808 Podcast, my favorite shit. Let's go.
Yo, what's going on, y'all? This is Master Ace from Brooklyn, New York, and you're checking out the Crate 808 Podcast, Real Hip Hop.
I was going to ask you as well, like, if you had like tracks on here, because you said every track is banging, but if there's anything that you deserves, think like a hidden gem that you think deserves a bit more shine that people don't really talk about, were there any particular ones you wanted to pull out?
That's hard, man, because I know people have hold this album up there. Like, the people, a lot of the lyricists I know really hold it up. For me, like, I'm impressed by like the fly talk and the complex lyricism, and he does it on every track, but the track that really like hits home for me is For the Brothers. Like, that shit there is like, no one does that anymore to that level, man. That paying homage to people you've loved and lost, telling street stories, cementing someone's life in art, in an artistic, in a musical form that way, that's the epitome of what's beautiful about hip hop. And like that alone, like, that's something that just, it enchants me. You know what I mean? I feel enchanted listening to it, because I'm like, I know I've lived through lives and I've lost people. I've seen how things go. And then with that, it's like, this is his story from a different time, from a different place. And it lines up and it leaves a legacy for these people. And that there for me, I think, should be held up more with one of the greatest storytelling sort of tracks of our time, man. I think.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think that legacy, it's not just who I've lost. It just paints the picture of where you're from, where he's from. You know what I mean? It's crazy, man.
Yeah. And I think that storytelling, again, on this album, it's peak storytelling, man. There's, like I said, For the Brothers, Blowing Up in the World as well. For me, my track off this album that I remember at the time being the one I rewound, in the 90s, but the one I was going back to was always Ghetto Nose, man. There's something about Ghetto Nose, them horn stabs, truly, truly sinister, right? But also really heart-wrenching. Like, at the end, when he says he was 17, I don't know, because it's so easy just to think, yeah, they're young people dying, but this really hit me hard, man. And even listening back now, it still hits me where I'm like, wow, that's just so young. But yeah, that's the
crazy thing. Like for me, I picked up the album when I'm 17. So imagine, he's talking about people that have gone when they're 17. I'm picking up the album when I'm 17.
Yeah.
So like, when you see just the level of what a life people, a person's lived to that point, and then for it to be put down on a piece of art that then I pick up at the same age as someone's gone, it's crazy, man. But yeah, that's the legacy of the art, man.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, man.
Was there any tracks on here that I was actually going to ask you about, like the storytelling, but we went into that. But I was thinking, like, you said there are some of the bars that you love. Can I just bring you, like, probably one of my hardest bars you'll ever hear is on Take Him to War, where he says, "I'm making Bloody Marys out of your capillaries." What?
Yo, my favorite bars from that as well, man, is the last bar.
Oh, man.
It's cool. It's G-Rap, baby. You know me, you try to hurt us to split your fucking top and leave a fingerprint on purpose.
Leave a fingerprint on purpose? Oh. That.
Like, the way he marries the words together, and then that is the coldest shit in the world. Is like, yo, I will get caught. This is me. Like,
yeah,
who did this to you?
And you know what, man? The production, I think, helps those words land for me. It feels like, yo, he has more space to play around in. Do you know what I mean?
See, this is the thing as an MC. It's like space in a track is one of the most important things. Mm. And it's like, if you've got something that's so solid, it can just be a sample. You know what I mean? And like that there, again, is my favorite sample on the album as well. That track, that Axelrod shit in there is phenomenal. And like, it takes you into another realm. Like, that shit is like, it takes you to, like, it's so cinematic and so sinister.
Mm.
And that track alone, like, dude, yo, just the hook, just,
yeah,
yo.
I'm here for that hook, man. I'm here for that hook. You, it's interesting you say that about, like, as an MC and finding space in a track and how it helps you do that. As an MC yourself, I'd love to dive in a little bit into your, like,
for sure,
creative process a little bit, if you know what I mean. As in, when you are writing your lyrics, how are you agonizing over every little thing, or are you more chill and you bash it out in half an hour? Like, how do you nail it?
It's a labor of love from the years I've done it. You know, I'm 30 now. I've been doing it since I was 13. But I say for the past five years, I've got to the place where I do a 16 in like half an hour. And for some people that might be long, some people that might be short. But for me, within that, I've got a way that I agonize. Is like, if I'm, you know, going very multi-syllable, I take time and make sure everything is in there on point, that slides in the beat in the right way. I'm always making sure I'm on pocket. I listen to the beat. If you ever listen to my music, most of the time, if you really sit down and listen to it, most of my bars, the way I fragment them up, land on the snare, or they land on, you know, if there's like a ba-boom, I will pattern my words to the beat. And that's the thing. A lot of the time, most of the stuff I write now is to that beat. Back in the day, you'd write stuff and then place it on something else and stuff. But like, I really take time to be in the pocket and have the swing that fits with whatever I'm given. The beauty of what I'm saying with the space, though, if you're given something that doesn't have much going on, you can really go off and be the fifth instrument on the track. You can be like the Rakim, where you're the saxophone on the beat, where it's like, okay, if there's space on the track, then I can really get complex, or I can really strip down my flow to make it more melodic, to be another instrument in that way. You know, so it's like, yeah.
Sorry, I was gonna say, but as an artist, which one do you prefer? Like, which one do you have more fun with? Do you prefer space to just do what you want, or do you want someone to give you a few constraints and now you've got to try to fit in that little box? Like, what's more fun to you, or are they both the same?
Oh man, they're both the same, man. They both have a beauty to it, but I feel like you know, it sounds a bit corny, but it's just the energy and the vibe off the beat and how it comes. It's all about the what it gives you. Like I say to a lot of people, I've worked with a lot of people and I still do, and it's like when I hear something, it's the first few seconds, it's the initial, like, if it's, I always say, if it sparks me off, if it sparks something in my brain, it's like when you're trying to start the engine when it's cold outside.
Yeah.
It's like, if I'm going like, then it's not right. If it goes woo in the first second, it's like,
wow,
I'm off. And that's the beauty of it. It's like my dopamine levels will hit the roof when the beat's fire.
Damn.
You know what I mean? It's like, I get that excited, and that's what leads you to write. And it's the music that usually tells you where to go with it. Sometimes I have ideas for concept, but It's the music that says, yo, you're going to write about this. You're going to say some fly shit on here, or this is going to be about the troubles in the world, or this is going to be about, you know, whatever it is. The music tells you somehow, man. Like you're in some, there's like some divine line to the ether that brings you the message that's like, yo, talk about the blue suede wallies on this two bars
boom,
here. So,
I love that, man. So, Jugs, when you were a kid and you were starting to rap, what was the thing that, because I think it takes a lot of balls to just step up on a stage or step up in a cypher, if there's a cypher kicking off. Like, what was it for you that made you step out of that and become, I'm not a spectator anymore, I'm coming off the sidelines and I'm going to participate? What was it that drove you to do that?
I've never been asked that, you know. That's a good question. Truthfully, it was wanting to be, I've always stuck out, like, as a person. I've always looked a bit different, and even as a kid I was very different. And I think it was always being seen, but not being seen in the way I wanted to be seen. So, like, I was always being seen for, like, you know, I'm mixed race, but no one really knew what my background was. And I've always been fat and I stuck out. And, you know, when you're like 11, 12, that's when I was really started to be like, I want to rap. Like, I was always seen, but never seen for me. And I was like, yo, I know I can rap my head off, even at that time. Because I was born into hip hop. Like, my dad's a drummer and a poet. My mum's an artist. I've been literally born into music. So I knew I'd be in it in some way. I was playing drums when I was two or three and writing poetry at a very young age through my dad and stuff. But it was the moment of being like, I want to be seen for who I am. And I know that I've always had this fire inside. It's like I had this Bunsen burner, this flame inside. And I was like, nah, this is how I want, this is me. Because I loved hip hop so much. And I was also doing grime because that was my age. So like it was intertwined. It was like, garage and grime was my childhood music, and that was like our punk, that was our rebellion. Even though my folks and my family, friends and people around us were all musicians and they're all cool, that was still me being like, yo, fuck you, like this is the grimiest shit in the world. But at the same time, you know, I was writing shit to grime, I was listening to Liquid Swords and Only Built for Cuban Links at 10 11, so my mind was just like flying with this stuff. But I think the first time, it takes a lot of guts. It's the most nerve-wracking stuff. But it was like, in my head, I was like, everyone always sees me, but not for who I really am. I was born into hip-hop, and this is me. This is how I want to be seen. And that gave me the confidence to walk through the world with a stride. Because otherwise, I'd have my head down. Yeah. But hip-hop made me, like, pick it up, man.
Brilliant.
So, yeah, thanks for that question, man. That's something I've not been asked before.
No, it's just, I find that the power of hip-hop to affect someone like yourself who's born with this music, it's a beautiful thing, man. And I know I say it a lot on this podcast, but I love the fact that this culture can do that.
It's my culture.
Yeah.
It's my culture. It's our culture. That's the thing. And it's
Do you remember a time when you realised you were good, though? Like, it's one thing to think, I want to do this. And then the next thing for someone to go, fuck, you're actually really good. do you know what I mean? Like, do you remember that?
Obviously, you grow up, you make some terrible shit. And because I did it from a young age in the internet era, there is stuff flying about that's not the best. But I was young. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so that's the thing. That's the hard part.
You know when I knew
I was good. I'm from a city that's got amazing. I'm from Nottingham. I got a city that's got amazing artists and beautiful people. But at the same time, it's a small city, and people feel like there can be only one and stuff like that. And like I've been blessed to be around some amazing artists. I knew I was good. And it's not just being in Nottingham. It was traveling around. I knew I was good probably 18 or 19. I knew I was good before that. It's in my head. And like friends were like, yo, you one of the best, whatever. I knew I was good when other good people got quiet.
Yeah.
I knew I was good when good people got fucking quiet. And I still feel like that today because people thought my name was behind the scenes. So like when the greats get quiet, that's when you know you're good.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I can't say shit to this guy right now. And a lot of people always say, who is this guy? Or this guy's a problem. And in that, it's the slang of this guy's a problem. It's the respect. But at the same time, the hidden message behind that is like, yo, this guy's a problem. So I knew I was good when I became a problem.
What a brilliant way to put it.
Because guess what? Most people ignore problems. So if you get quiet, you're ignoring the problem. And that's, you know.
Man, deep. The levels, bro. It's like G-Rap levels right now. I love this.
Yo, what up, y'all? This is DJ Premier, and you're checking out the Crates 808 podcast. podcast. I put an S on it because there's more than one record in the crate. You know what I'm saying? So that's how we dig. That's how we play. And that's what real DJs do. You heard? That's why it goes down. We out here.
But just jumping back into the album then, yeah? We've done a little bit of the Age Versus a joke and all that. I was actually wondering, right, if this album had to have, you have to have a non-90s rapper on here, can you think of who you would want to hear on here with G-Rap?
It's crazy, man. There's so many people, especially in this modern era, in this you know, Renaissance period. But I think, and I know they've worked together, but I think Mayhem Loren.
Yes.
I think Mayhem Loren, I think the Queen's connection, and I think his cadence with Cool G Rap's cadence, them as people, the fly shit, I just think it would have married perfectly. Yeah. Just the Queen's connect alone, but I think Mayhem, him and May would be like otherworldly, you know what I mean?
Have you heard the Glass 2.0 EP with Mayhem and...
Oh, yeah. Yo, Mayhem Loren's good peoples, man. You know what I mean? There's people like that, and like he's you know, in this past 10 years, he was really at the forefront, you know, at the beginning with Rock Mars, with Action Bronson, the people right at the beginning of this whole wave that's happening now, you know, so... Yeah, I've heard it. I heard all of it, man. Yo, I'm a big fan of me, man.
He's got a swordfish in the back, Jugs. He's got a swordfish.
Yo,
he's got
swordfish, all types of sea animals and accoutrements in the back. And yo, it's probably got a Coogee cloth for the table. You know what I mean? Table Coogee table cloths.
Yeah.
Coogee picnic baskets and shit.
Exactly, man. This is interesting, though. You know what you just cut it onto there when you were saying like this, and you called it a Renaissance, and I love that word, man, because it actually is, isn't it? Like, when you think of, everyone's going to point to Griselda, but then you've got Ransom out there, you've got honestly, when I was listening to this album, the production on this, execution of style especially, and there's some bars on there about hula hooping. I'm going to put holes in you so your mates can hula hoop you. What? But if you look at the production of an execution of style, I was just listening to that and I was like, do you know what? There's people like, I'm not sure if you know much of Billy Woods, but like there's people like Billy Woods and there's people like even someone like Blue or someone like even Danny Brown, so wild out on this kind of horror. It's almost like a horrorcore. To be fair, the album has that element. It's 95.
It has horrorcore, but look who we work with after. You know what I mean? Like he's worked with Necro and people like that down the line. Where that this is the beginning of the lineage. Do you know what I mean? But there's so much production on here that will fit. And the crazy thing is that Buckwild did production on here, so he's doing a lot now as well. Do you know what I mean? Within this era of these MCs, so that's how this marries up as well with the album. But yo, shout out to Griselda, and shout out to like you said, Ransom. I used to listen to his mixtapes, you know, in the mixtape era, and that's the thing, because some people don't know him of now, but you know, during the D-Block, Dipset, G-Unit era, Ransom was, you know, that era he was putting stuff out, and me and my people used to listen to him, man. So I'm glad he's doing what he's doing now as well. Do you know what I mean? But like, yo, the production on this album as well, man. You know the crazy thing is, like, because I'm such a fan of the greats, Premier, RZA, you know the people of this era that were like absolutely killing it. But with this, it was more low key with the big names, and it's still a classic. It's still built for Cool G, man, and that's a beautiful thing, man. To not have, you know, Buckwild's a legend, but to not have the biggest names, you know, while you're in the era of the Bad Boys and everyone, you've got something that's so street and so classic. You know, it's a hard thing to do, man.
I know. I wonder if, because we've all heard the story about him introducing Nas to Def Jam and them saying he's just another Cool G Rap. And when you hear that, it's almost like what's bad about being another Cool G Rap and making something of your own. But I suppose it's also like you can look at it and go, maybe if he did get some really big producers in, more people would talk about G-Rap in their... I think people like me and you will talk about G-Rap in our convos. For instance, I don't know if you've heard about that app, Clubhouse. I'm on that app sometimes. No one's talking about G-Rap. They're all talking about other artists. And I feel like if you actually, like you said, if you actually listen to the flow of some of these people, G-Rap originated that, man. Or at least the Juice Crew did. So I feel like maybe he may have got a bit more into those convos if he had used big producers. I don't think he should. I don't think it matters, but it's just interesting. Yeah. It's one of them what ifs.
This is the hard thing. There's always what ifs, and it's like, people always say, you know, the even Nas and G-Rap, people have always said, oh, they don't pick beats well. And that's always been a downfall. But like, I don't know, as lyricists, like, they're some of the best. The problem is people always focus on the commercial aspect, and people see the commerciality as what makes you one of the best. Unfortunately, in the mainstream sense, in a mainstream mind frame, that is so. But when you're talking about art, that's not true. It's never true, because the greatest artists are the ones who are always the influencers, the ones who are underground doing it and never quite hit that mark. They never quite hit that commercial level because their mind is on a different wavelength. And it's like Nas has hit that commercial level, but there's still the intelligence within these men and women that is so beyond, it can't infiltrate the mainstream mind. It just doesn't land because it goes over people's heads. So if the beat's fire, then people know it. If there's a name behind the beat, then they can accept it. They're not even listening to the lyrics. But when it actually comes to it, it's like, you know, I say all this, but then at the same time, I would have loved to hear Cool G and Biggie on a shiny suit joint. I'm not gonna lie, I love that shit. So I would have loved to hear them together, you know, fucking standing outside a casino in Vegas rapping about the flyest shit in the world. Yeah. Like, that would have been incredible. But you know what? Cool G's the pinnacle, you know, the Mount Rushmore of lyricism. You know what I mean? So that's what he's, and if people don't want to talk about it on Clubhouse, let them talk whatever.
But yeah, like, I know.
Artists, no. Rappers, no. I've worked with a producer called Giallo Point, and like, me and him were talking about, you know, I've done this album Back to the Grill again with him, and we've got another one coming out. And like, we talk about Cool G all the time because we're like, yo, this guy is, when it comes to, you know, especially DJs and stuff, he had the DJ Polo and all this stuff. People know, man. They really know. They know their lineage.
Yeah, for sure. You know what I mean? I think it's just different. I think hip hop's so big now that it isn't what I remember. I think sometimes I forget, and I think it's what I used to have in the 90s and early noughties. And it was like, oh, that, you know, if you know, everyone knows. But actually, no, hip hop's so big now.
Nah.
Hip hop's so big now. You ain't gonna, some people just ain't gonna look back like you yourself did. And if they do look back, they may look back at other things and beats and not so much the lyricisms. Do you know what I mean?
See, this is the thing. And like, I'm a producer as well, so I always go back to beats and I go back to all the elements, but that's me. But I'm 30 and I'm out the loop now. No one can keep up. It's impossible. And like, as a, you know, someone who's in hip hop and someone who's a fan or whatever your artist, you want to be up to date and wanted to know, but I can't. What I've had to realize now, it's not all for me.
Yeah.
So if I know what's for me, then I can still go back and I'm still finding gems from the past, shit that I missed out on, or, you know, because I was a kid, you know, I was barely talking when some of this classic shit came out. Do you know what I mean? And there's some incredible shit coming out now. There's so much stuff, but you can get lost in that. I think it's when you become stagnant and when you become stuck in one place, I think people yearn for the past of their era, their golden era, their feeling of when they were, people always search for childhood, and childhood's never back. But if you can just embrace, and if it's not for you, it's not for you. But yeah, it's a place you can get lost trying to keep up.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. Absolutely. On a side point there, when you were saying trying to keep up and that, but like, back in the day, I remember when, we were listening to, I think it's like in the show, it said Shiny Suit era, and keeping up then, I didn't want to keep up with some of that because it was like, I'm a backpacker. I don't listen to that.
Yeah,
and I used to have this really biased, blinkered view of people like Jigger and people like that. And then I'm listening to this album, right? I'm listening to this album and I'm listening to stuff like, well, It's a Shame is different because it has a melancholy kind of like, almost like, I don't want to be doing this to get the money. But then there are tracks all over this where he's talking about just making money. And that's what and I feel like, oh,
it's the same shit. And it's like, I understand that blink of view, because when you become part of a tribe, that's your tribe, and you have views and you have a way that's fits. But like, I've always found like, I grew up, you know, and I never fit into one box. I was never with one person. So I didn't have those blinkers on in that way. So I was open to everything. I never saw, oh, I can't listen to this because it's not this or whatever. But like, you know, a lot of people say that about, oh, they're only talking about this and the modern stuff's this. But like, you know, if you're a fan of Griselda, that's all they talk about is money, drugs, sex, crime.
Yeah.
So you can't say that just because the beat's a sample or a loop or something and it hits the era you're from.
Yeah.
That's it, you know, people, there's that cognitive dissonance of like, oh no, all that other stuff's crap. It's like,
yeah.
yo,
Yeah.
Open up, man. I keep my ears and eyes open to everything because that's the beauty of life. You find gems everywhere.
Absolutely, man. And then I also realized how privileged I was to be even sitting there and having a go at a rapper for talking about money. Because then when you then actually think about it, you're like, talk about money, man. You guys came from nothing.
See there, you said it. That's the key, is people were all like, I came up when, you know, the big thing when I was young was people would be like, I don't listen to 50 Cent. They had this thing against 50 Cent and like, okay, you don't like commercial music, but they're like, all he does is talk about money and talk about drugs and this and that. It's like, break it down. Look where he came from. Look what he's been through. Look, and you know, they're saying that he promotes this and promotes that, but so does the people you're listening to. But if you actually break down where people are coming from, the key, as you said, the privilege to be able to say, I don't want to hear about chains. But if you came from, you know, people who said that, who are from an upper middle class household that have never realized, you want to adorn yourself with this shit. So you feel empowered. You feel like you've come from somewhere you can show your wealth.
Yeah.
It's sad that you have to do it that way. But at the same time, I've worked for this. I've made this myself. And I came from a place where I had nothing. So for you to say to someone, oh, you know, I don't want to hear this, and even like putting down their art in that way, it's like, yo, why does your voice have a say on this person's whole career and where they come from? People come from nothing. So yeah, talk your shit, man.
Exactly.
Talk your shit. And exactly the thing is, it's art. It's you know, subjective. You can take what you want from it and leave some of it, man.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
And you can separate the art from the artist too sometimes if you want to. It's how you want to go with it, man.
Mm-hmm. Jokes, I mean? Dropping gems, man. Dropping gems. That's it, though. It's true. I completely agree.
Yeah, man, you know what I'm saying? It's your man, Bodie James, Concrete is 227, Griselda Records, man. You know what I'm saying? And shout out to the Crate 808 podcast, man. Tell them, man, the world know this shit on the flow, dog.
So right, say we haven't even really talked about food. And I know you're a chef, like, extraordinaire, yeah, man. Yeah. I was going to ask you, right, say G-Rap comes round, right, he's in Knots.
Mm.
You're going to feed him. At your house, right? What are you feeding G-Rap? What's on the menu?
Ooh, what am I feeding G-Rap? That's crazy. I think maybe like a fresh tagliatelle Alfredo. I do like a tagliatelle Alfredo, but a vegetable one with a cream sauce, little bit of nutmeg in there.
Ooh.
You know, some aged Parmesan, and then maybe I don't know if he eats meat or not. So maybe I do some salmon on the side, maybe some salmon in a lemon butter sauce with some parsley, and then like, because you've got like the Italian there, but throw it off with like maybe I do a Turkish salad or something with the Turkish white cheese, maybe some you know, some sumac in there.
A
nice fresh rosé. You know what I mean? I think that like, and maybe, and then some of the big, you can get big capers, throw some big capers in the lemon butter parsley sauce, you know what I mean? And then
yeah. For all of it, I'm just sitting there like mouthwatering. I'm not gonna lie, I'm like, wow, G-Rap's in for it. First of all, if you've not really heard much of Jugger's music, go out there, listen to it. But I am giving a disclaimer, you're gonna be fucking starving by the end of it. the videos as well, when you got the pasture on the go and you got, I'm a big fan, man. So I'm enjoying the food references generally, man. I'm enjoying those generally. But I was diving back into your work as well. And one thing I'd missed at the time, man, you got Rakim on Brownstone on the Bon Vivant album, right? Just chatting. How did that happen, man?
See, I'm glad you clocked that as well. Like, I put that in there just as a little, it's like a little, an Easter egg, as people say. Like, it's a little Easter egg on there for people to find. But I open for, so like, I work with Joe Buddha a lot in Knots. And we're doing shows, and I opened for Rakim in 2011. So I was 21, and the show was amazing. It was a packed out, like sold out show. And I got to sit down with him after for like, yo, the guy talked to me for like 2 hours, and there was, you know, me and my friends in the room. They did some interviews, but for some reason, he just gave me his time, man.
Wow.
And he came with his friend, Supreme. And he it was his like first time out, and they're telling me about, you know, Fort Greene and like, but just asking me about myself too. And like, Rakim it blew my mind. That solidified it. It's like, I've met a lot of rappers up to that point, But this guy, like, always, it makes me feel emotional. Like, this guy, like, he's just done a show that's like, everyone wants to, but he's, you know, he's looking at me in my eyes and just really talking to me as an elder statesman, as a general, as a king of this shit, and just giving me his time. And we did some shout outs, and he did some shout outs for different people. But that shout out there, he was just like, yo, I just seen Juggernaut blowing off on the stage, 1,000 bars and all that. He didn't have to say that.
Wow.
You know, and I know we caught some of it at the back. While I was performing, and like, not many artists do that either. They don't come out to see the opening acts, but there's a balcony and rescue rooms in Knots, and they were up there. So even if you saw it for 10 seconds, I was 21 and Rakim seen me performing. I got to sit down with the legend. So that little clip cements it. And I wanted to put it on there, you know, and that album's from 2018, Bon Vivant. And that, it's just leaving those, it's like an Easter egg trail, it's like following the crumbs to greatness. Like, I've been, like, people think I'm a new jack, like, and I might be to some people, but I've been doing it for years and years. And, you know, opening for legends, I've opened for Big Daddy Kane.
Wow.
I've opened for Rakim. I've opened for KRS-One. I've opened for DJ Premier, Ghostface.
Jeez.
You know, the list goes on, man. But like, that solidified it for me. Like, yo, this guy has just done a bigger show. He's in England. There's 1,000 people who want to talk to him. He can sit down and talk to us. Mm. Like, you know, like, wow. I've known him all my life.
That's amazing.
Legendary, man.
Do you know what? Yeah. That goes, because for the pod, we've been talking to a lot of people in the 90s and late 80s, all talking about like Rakim, and, you know, he kind of dominates conversations. And everything I hear about him is he's a nightmare to get down and sit down and chat to.
That's crazy.
That's mad that happened for you, because I've had journalists on this pod, they're like, who's the hardest person you've interviewed? Rakim. Why? Because we'll turn up, open the door, and he's run out the back door because he doesn't want to do an interview. He doesn't like talking. And I'm like, what? Wow. So there you go, man. That says a lot.
You know, it's probably because the cameras or the recorders weren't rolling in that way. He did the shout outs, but like, it was a conversation. It was a celebration after a great show. It was people who are artists in a room rejoicing about the art we do. And that was the beauty of it. So I got to shout out Joe Buddha for putting me on, even at that age, man.
Yeah,
definitely.
Big up Joe Buddha, man. I was going to ask you as well, because again, the albums you've done, Bem is just a brilliant piece of work. I love the artwork.
Oh, thank you, man.
Yeah, just a wicked, and just so fresh. It just makes me feel like I know you a bit better listening to that.
That's exactly what I want to hear.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I want
to
hear.
There's one thing that really stuck out to me in that album was Baldwin's outro. And I know it's like just the outro.
But yo, I'm...
That. Tell me about that. What made you want to use that excerpt? Like, what was it about that? Because I'm not going to lie, 2020, man, it got me. This is the year that kind of stuff really hits me, man.
Y'all get goosebumps when you're bringing it up, because no one's brought that up. And I started the album with my dad. My dad's an amazing artist and a real gentleman, a gentle man.
Mm-hmm.
And almost a griot, a storyteller, and a poet, and to end the album with someone that's also his influence and one of my influences of being a decent human being on this planet. Like, Baldwin is so important and imperative to Black people and all humans. He had the insight, being a Black gay man in a time where both of those were life-threatening things. To just be a human, to be a Black gay man, was life-threatening. And he came out of America, he went across the world, and he took time to see what it is and what's the experience to be the human he is. And he told it, people love to have this phrase, yo, I like people who tell it how it is. And that, to me, allows people, a lot of people, to be dickheads, right? But Baldwin told it how it is, with the utmost truth and honesty, coming from where he came from. And I wanted to end it with that, because on the album, I touched on a lot of race stuff. I touched on a lot of the stuff that people go through as humans in this life. But I never want to preach. I'm not a preacher. I love fly shit. I love all kind of crazy stuff, but I always add the little bit of sugar with the medicine. And I ended it with that, because what he's saying is so poignant, is that people judge other people and they're scared of other people and they fear other people and it comes across as hate. But when you look at another person, you're seeing yourself. You're a mirror. You're a mirror to that person. And me, myself, I've always felt that. I've always been judged for who I am, and to see people see me and they don't know who I am, what I am. If you look at a chair and it looks like a chair, you know it's a chair. If you look at me, you don't quite get it. People have never quite got me, and I'm finally okay with that. And growing up, reading people like Baldwin and reading people, you know, of that ilk, it's like I had to cement that in there. But what he's saying is like, you want to judge other people, you want to look at other people, and when you say those things about other people, you're saying them about yourself because you actually hate yourself. And that's the thing. I needed to end on something poignant that I couldn't say. I needed to just, you know, lay it down from a legend, and you know, and also in hip hop, there's so much homophobia, there's so much racism, even within hip hop, there's racism, even within hip hop, there's sexism and all kind of bullshit. And I listen to it. I've been around it. I've said things in the past, but it's all about education. It's about moving forward as men and women that we take the time to understand. And it's like, like this, don't discount someone because of just being a human.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's like, come on, man. Yeah, that's the key. I'm glad you brought that up, man, because I haven't really talked on that, but it was very important to me to end the album that way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Man, it's just deep. It was just one of them made me stop what I was doing. It really did. I was like,
yo, I got one sec. I got the vine.
Oh, there it is. Look at that. Sick.
Yo, shout out to Dope Records, man. Shout out to Purist, man. Good people. They put this out and it meant a lot to be solidified on that label. And they put out some incredible stuff. But yeah, man, I did the artwork myself as well, which
oh, wicked.
Yeah, I'm glad that people like it. It's my face throughout the years.
Oh, wicked.
So there's actually, you can't really see it that well, but there's a baby picture in there. There's like me at 16, I put it out for my on the 25th of Feb of this year, 2020, when I was 30. So it's me turning 30. So
damn.
when you said it feels like I know, like I got to know you, that's exactly what I wanted. This album encapsulates me through and through.
Love it.
The rare groove shit, the straight hardcore shit, the fly talk, the stuff you can dance to, the stuff that makes you think, the stuff that's stripped back, no drum sample, all of it comes together. You know what I mean? So yeah, sorry, I'm going off. I get excited when people have really you know, dug into stuff. You know what I mean?
No, man, I think it's like imperative especially if you're like putting all the work in. Do you know what I mean? So I love that, man. It's a wicked album.
Yes, yes, you're rocking with the best. This is the one and only Just Blaze. Right now, you're checking out the Crate 808 podcast. Remember to hit up crate808.com, like, comment, subscribe, and all of that. Peace.
I was actually going to ask as well about like your latest project. We're doing this in December, but I was actually going to say before 12 Bricks, just touching on that Baldwin outro and how you wanted to use it to kind of cap it off. Obviously, this year has been absolutely wild. And I personally have had a lot of different experience, especially about the protests in America that has led to this kind of global sea change of like people just questioning. In my immediate vicinity, no one had ever, ever said the words white privilege. And now people are talking about it. Have you witnessed any of that in your immediacy? Like, is there any different conversations or what? How have you been getting through it, man?
Definitely, man. Like, there's been an uprising. That's what it is. It's a racial uprising. It's something that's needed to happen for a long time. I mean, it's still a lot of stuff still not changed. A lot of people, it scared a lot of people, so it's done the opposite. The thing for me in my immediate vicinity, like, I've been brought up around. I've done stuff myself that's, you know, considered, you know, activism or I've done workshops and all kind of stuff around racism. My dad's done so much. He's been a mixed race man in the UK and going through what he grew up with. And like, you know, my partner's done so much with her, like with her work and my whole family. So we've always had that around. That's always been a thing. We're a mixed family. Every single background, all different types of people has been around us. For me, I've grown up around it. So I just being inclusive. So that's not been a thing, but what has been interesting is people questioning themselves. And that is the key. The only way to change is if you question yourself. Yeah. If you put up the defensiveness, if you put up the guard, then you've got no way of changing because you're just being defensive. You can't allow in this information. People are not saying it for the sake of it. And the thing is, people for years have been saying, I'm tired of hearing about race. Yeah, of course you're tired of hearing about race because it doesn't affect you in that way. You're not allowing it. Also, you're not digging into yourself and seeing where inside you, you have to work on yourself first, man. And the thing is, when people talk about white privilege, it like sparks people. But I'm mixed race, but I've been white passing in the past. So I've grown up, all my friends were black. or, you know, dark skin, why were the police talking to me as if I was a human and not talking to them?
Yeah.
That's white privilege. That's my own privilege. That's my light skin privilege walking through the world. I can, you know, maybe not get stopped as much. I can get away with stuff. I can go into a white village in England and they're not going to deal with me the same way as my friends and my own family.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like, that's privilege alone. Mm. I'm a male privilege. So people get pissed off about all this stuff, but you have to break it down, man.
Yeah.
If you put up the guards and the barriers, you don't want to grow, and people fear growing because growth is change, and change is fear because you don't know what it's going to be.
Yeah.
The anxiety is, if you don't know what it's going to be, how do we get there? And I'm scared of that difference. And that's what's happened now with a racial uprising and a global pandemic. Shit's gone out of our hands. Shit's changed in an instant like that. And people have lost their minds because they don't know what's ahead of them.
Yeah.
But in life, you never know what's ahead of you.
That's it.
Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Since the change in politics and all that as well. But I remember one thing that really hit home as well this year was how powerful language is in comparison to those racial things. So for instance, I live up north, I'm in Derby. So sorry, man, I know you're not.
Well, I'm not a football guy. I'm not any of that. I'm not petty with Pettison.
So, but you know, I've been brought up in the Midlands, Yorkshire, and going into pubs straight away, okay, Asian lad in a pub with no other Asians around him, that's different. Two, just talking, and I can put on different voices, I realise. This year, I really realized I've got like now what I'm talking to you now. When I have Black Thought on, I'm talking differently. When I'm then going to work, I'm talking differently. When I go to the pub, I'm talking differently. And I'm like, this is mad. I've had to be a chameleon for so long just to be accepted.
But the thing is, that is a defense mechanism that you've had to build up, being in a racist society, being a society that doesn't allow you to be you fully. You have to be a chameleon to survive, to not be in, you know, if you went into the pub full of white people and you got that Asian twang, that is one of the most that British Asian twang is one of my favorite things about this country.
Yeah.
If you go in there with that, that's instantly a spark to make people be on some bullshit. Like, and we shouldn't have to go through that. But even that, you have to deflect yourself when you walk in a room. You have to deflect, knowing, but that is the most exhausting part about racism, is knowing damn well there's going to be some bullshit and you have to change yourself. That's the key to white privilege as well, is not being able to fucking walk through the world with no spatial awareness, no awareness, and not change. And just, I always said, like, I wish I had the confidence of like an average middle-class white guy. Like, I wish I had that confidence, because they can just do anything they want in the world.
But I've got to say, but there's a lot of fragility in that, though. As in, I have I've got some of my best mates are that.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because they still maybe deem that they have to change, but it's more of a class thing, or it's more of a regional or geographic thing.
Mm.
Well, if you have to do that, then remember what people like us guys, and also not just us guys, man, like poor people have to do to, you know, escape. And again, going back to 4, 5, 6, then throwing the dice, then playing, that all comes back where it's like, this is their life, man. This is their life.
This is their truth. And that's the key.
That's their
truth, People love to denounce people's realities and people's truth. And you don't have the right, because everyone's lived their life and they have, that's their journey and that's their truth. And even if someone is from what people consider privilege, they have their own truth. But it's about not denouncing other people's life, telling them, oh, you've had enough, or you know, this is not right, I don't feel comfortable. Let that other person feel comfortable. And if people want to talk about money because they come from nowhere, let them, because that's what brings them up. That, you know, it's social climbing, it's social capital.
Yeah.
You know, when black people have money, they're respected more, they're seen, they're seen for who they are. And, you know, black culture, hip hop culture is the most appropriated, commodified and used thing of all time.
Yeah.
Hip hop culture is the most influential culture of, I think, of this, of all time.
Yeah.
The same way as like a very poor white girl from Nottingham who lives in like a place called Bullwell, which is super working class. She's wearing Timberland boots. Why? Why? It's from New York. It's hip hop culture. Exactly. It's cool.
Yeah,
it's black.
Yeah,
you know. So
exactly.
When you break it down, it's like the movement of hip hop, and but the beauty of hip hop is that it does accept everyone. It embraces everyone, and you can be from anywhere and have a culture and have a people. It's been said 1,000 times and people think it's corny, but it's like, yo, you can be from anywhere on this planet.
Yeah.
And if you love hip hop music, you have a people and you have a culture.
Yeah,
and that alone, you know, helps you sleep at night because you're like, I can wake up, I don't fit in, but I'm still part of hip hop.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Man, we're getting deep right now and I love it. I love this.
Good,
jokes, man.
Good,
this is
good.
this is what I'm talking about. If we just jump onto your next project then, man. Well, latest one we're recording, 12 Bricks with Michael Parkinson, man. Big up Michael Parkinson.
Yeah, man. Wicked big project. Up Parky, man.
I know you did 6 Bricks before. Talk me through that project, man. Like, how did it come about? Is there room for more?
Oh man, there's always room for more, man. And Parky makes like 1,000 beats a day. Like, I don't, this guy, he must just smoke one spliff and he's like in another realm of like 1,000 beats. But yeah, it's,
yeah,
yo, it came together because I think about 2016, he hit me up and I put a video out and he was like, yo, who's this guy? Like, he just heard about me and he's like, straight away, he posted it up online. He was like, yo, this guy's fire. And I knew of him and I was like, yo, I respect you being of the level you're at to just throw that up there. And he was like, nah, man, like if someone's fire, I go with it. And then he just said, yeah, we need to work. And he sent me a bunch of beats and I was like, I'm down, man. Like,
yeah.
I was super hungry and I was just like, yeah, I'm on it. And then he was just positive, man. And it wasn't any ego. There wasn't any weirdness. And there's always been this hard thing of like anyone outside of London trying to tap in. And he was like, no, man, like there wasn't even any of that, man. And he just was respectful from the jump. And, you know, we've grown to be good friends, man. That's like fam. So yeah, it just gelled and it was like the energy when I sent him something. It wasn't like, he wasn't super picky or it wasn't like, oh, you can't say this or that. He's like, yo, this is ill, maybe try this. And then after 6 Bricks, he really, so that was the EP we put together and we put that out 2017. I did a bunch of videos for it and stuff. And then, so 12 Bricks is the amalgamation of 6 Bricks, the EP. We made an album into 12 Bricks. So, you know, that was the idea. And then 6 Bricks never got a release on like tape or vinyl or anything. So that finally got to release as an album as 12 Bricks, but he got the ear for what I like. So he sent me a bunch of stuff and I was being picky at that point. I was like, yeah, I need to pick the right beats. And I did. Yeah. And then it came together well, but we finished recording maybe 2018. So it's actually a little older, but it was the right time now.
I think
we've both put a lot of work in and he's been releasing stuff and I have, and it came to a point when it was the right time.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And I love the album, man. I think it's, people love it worldwide. It's also very UK at the same time. So I really need to push something that was really had a British sound as well.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Love that. It's the era of collabs as well. Like, I think collabs in the last say 5 years have just been, there's been some gold classic, modern classic projects. 2 questions then. 1, if G-Rap was to drop a collab, one producer collab next year, who would you want it to be with?
Oof, shit. That's hard, man. It might sound just like, because everyone's sick, but I think it'd have to be Alchemist.
I knew it was coming. I was waiting for Alchemist.
Yeah, but you know, come on. The realist, like,
yeah,
on, the real, like that joint alone is like phenomenal. So yeah, I think it, Alchemist with like a bunch of stuff that's just straight samples and then a bunch of like the early 2000 Alchemist beats on there. Like, yo, but that joint off the Alchemist album with him and G-Rap, like, where they're both spitting and they're doing they're breaking down the words, like.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. But yeah, it's sick. Yeah, I remember
You know which one I mean, innit? That shit's crazy, man.
Yeah, I know. I love it when he goes back and forth. He does it with Nas on the album as well, because it's very easy just to do verses.
Nah, but when I love back and forth, man.
Back and forth is wicked. Okay, I'm enjoying that. Second one then, what's the collaboration you want to do, man? Like, you've done Michael Parkinson. Is there a dream collab you'd love to do? Is it
Alchemist would be the pinnacle, man. Alchemist would be the pinnacle.
I can hear that. I can hear you on that, man.
Alchemist would be the pinnacle, man. But there's so many. I'd love to. Oh man, this just sets me off. I'd love to work with like Rock Mars doing the beats as well. I'd love to do that.
That Stove God album.
Oh, that's great. Yo, the production and Stove God's crazy, man. So there's so many. Like, I love Jake One's beats as well. I really like Jake One, but not a lot of people talk about him as much. But there's a few people like that, man. But
Wicked.
Man, my head goes off to this. Do you know there's too many.
Do you know which one I really wanted? Black Milk. And I'm a Black Milk fan. Everyone on the pod knows that. But I was thinking that snapping, like, drums.
Yeah.
That.
Yo, that would be crazy.
Yeah, man. I'd be.
Have you heard Children of Zeus on the Black Milk joint? There's Children of Zeus on Black Milk. That's crazy, man. That big up Children of Zeus. That's my people, man. They're killing it, man.
Big up,
Just, I'd love to do a project with Just Blaze. Like, them type of beats, man. Just classic Just Blaze shit.
It would light it up. Light it up, bro. Get on his Twitch stream, man. Do that. Come on, man. That Twitch stream is sick. His Twitch streams are sick. But Jugs, man, thank you, man. Thank you for bringing the flavor. I've thoroughly enjoyed this chat. I've enjoyed the album, just chatting about that, but everything, man. And I really respect your spirit, your like passion for it. I find some of that in me as well. So I love that, man. I appreciate that, man, for sure.
Yeah, definitely, man.
Is there anything you wanted to plug, man, before we go? Is there anything new coming up?
Go out there and get 12 Bricks, me and Michael Parkinson. It's on all the streaming platforms. You can get the vinyl at Tuff Kong Records. Shout out to Tuff Kong for putting it out. Go out there and get BEM. I put that out this year, BEM. The vinyl is probably about £10,000 now, but you can get that off Discogs. there might be someone selling like a little piece of it online, like the corner. You know what I mean? You can snort that. But yeah, go and get BEM. And then this Friday, we the 18th of December, we got Polo Palace coming out. So that's me, the Fly Hooligan, and Sonny Jim as a trio.
Okay,
we got an album.
Fly Hooligan. Hooligan, you were on Shotgun the Orcs. They just school me on him. Yeah, he's sick.
Yeah, the Fly Hooligan, me, Sonny Jim, and the Fly Hooligan. We got album Polo Palace. It's a joint album produced by me and Sonny Jim. Mm. And we've got a crazy feature on there from Thurston Howell the Third. That's who we got because he's the legend, the Polo Master. And shout out to Racklow. Racklow did some skits on there and the shit's crazy, man. So that's what we got coming out next. But I got more stuff with Giallo Point. I've got crazy... my hard drive's crying. My hard drive's like, you've got too much shit on here. And you need to release it to the world. But I'm lining up. I'm trying to line up the next level. I'm lining up to hit that level because I've been running on a treadmill right now. But I'm ready, man. I'm ready for the stratosphere.
I'm looking forward to it, man. Jugs,
I really appreciate you giving me the time, and you know what I mean.
Yeah, man. Anytime you want to come back on, them doors are open, bro. It's always good to have you on, bro.
Appreciate you, man.
I was gonna say then before we jump off. 456 in Crate 808, locked in, wicked. But what was the last great piece of music you heard, Jugs? Could be old, could be new, but just the last great piece. And it can't be off this album.
Oh, that's crazy. Let me think about it.
Yeah, man.
Let me think about it. I'm always exploring. I'm always going back and forward and around. And you know what? I'm gonna be lazy, but I can't remember the name of it. I'm gonna pull it up. There was a track that my pop showed me that was so crazy, man. And if people go back and listen to it, people will probably sample it now, but right. So the artist is Manfredo Fest, and it's Brasiliana #1. Okay. And this Brazilian, this Brazilian shit is like, if people know Chick Corea and that type of level stuff, it's like, the shit was like, it took me on a spiritual journey to into Ethernet cable, into the computer, all the way through life. Like my pops was like, "Yo, you need to listen to this shit."
That's amazing.
I felt like a human Monstera plant. I felt like a human cheese plant.
Mate, that's brilliant.
There's something in music, like I was saying, there's some of my dopamine levels in my head, I lose work.
I love it.
But Manfredo Fest, check them out. It's just classic, like Brazilian out there shit, man. But yeah, that was the last piece, but
wicked.
That was it. I could go off, but I'll leave it at that.
Mate, for the next time, I love that, Jugs. I love it, man. Well, thank you very much, bro. And we'll catch you on the flip side. People, go check out crate808.com for all that good stuff and subscribe and like. Boom. Peace.
Peace.